The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 225, entitled, How to Recover from Addiction, Overcome a Severe Prison Sentence, and Transform Your Life for Success and Happiness, I chat with Rob Groupy. Rob Groupy is a life transformation facility owner, and in today's episode, Rob talks about how he was able to overcome a major drug addiction that almost took his life and successfully transform his life after spending 7.5 years in prison. He covers his past behaviors, mindset, and attitude towards life prior to his prison sentence, and talks about what he did whilst in prison to completely reinvent himself and his outlook on life. Rob also covers what he does now in transforming the lives of his transformation facilities members and how going through so much of his own struggles has been crucial to giving back and helping so many others now. If you're wondering how to change your negative behaviors or outlook on life and reinvent yourself for success and happiness, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Hey, are you following me on Instagram yet? If not, you are completely psychotic, but you do have a chance to redeem yourself. Go to Instagram right now and follow at Justin Stenstrom. That's JustinStenstrom. That's right. That's my first and last name. And when you follow me, you'll get day-to-day updates on book recommendations, biohacking tools, elite man know-how, and all the glorious content I probably shouldn't post about, but do anyways. Whether pics of me trying to conquer the world in my personal life or stories about cutting-edge research and technology, I post all the time on Instagram. It's one of my favorite platforms, so you have to be following me to keep up to date on Elite Man know-how. Get your daily dose of Elite Man entertainment and information Sunday through Saturday, Instagram at Justin Stenstrom. Also, you can always click the link in the show notes, which will take you to this link and all of the links that we mention here on the Elite Man podcast. All right, I got some awesome news. Our Elite Life Nutrition Turmeric is now available. Go to EliteLifeNutrition.com/turmeric right now to get your very own turmeric, delivering 1,500 milligrams of pure turmeric root extract plus 100 milligrams of turmeric standardized at 95% curcuminoids and 10 milligrams of bioperin, which is black pepper, per serving. We have worked hard to ensure the highest levels of potency and absorbability in each bottle. Turmeric is one of the most important and beneficial herbs on the planet. It's been used for thousands of years in Ayurvedic medicine to help improve joint pain, heart health, brain function, skin health, and liver function. As a powerful antioxidant, it can also support a number of other key organs in the body like the kidneys, thyroid, and adrenal glands. Yes, supplementing daily with this wonder herb is truly one of the best ways to ensure your health and vitality for years to come. I absolutely love turmeric. I've been using it personally for years, and I am so excited to actually have it available for Elite Life Nutrition. Make sure you go to EliteLifeNutrition.com/turmeric right now to pick up your own turmeric bottle and see just why I'm so pumped and excited about it. And by the way, these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Go to EliteLifeNutrition.com/turmeric right now. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com, and my guest today is Rob Groupy, Life Transformation Facility owner. Rob, thanks so much for coming on the show today, man.
For sure, man. Happy to be on here.
Yeah, but can you just take a minute or so for the listeners who may not be familiar with your story? Can you just fill in the blanks and just kind of tell them exactly what you do right now?
So me and my fiance own Twice Bitten CrossFit. It's in Oklahoma City. It's one of the largest CrossFit gyms in Oklahoma and maybe even the world. We're about 16,000 square feet. And we really consider ourselves like a life transformation facility and not just a fitness facility. So that's what we do currently. I have an amazing team that I'm able to be very transparent with about everything. And, you know, everybody on the team is there because they really want to make an impact in people's lives. So not just in the fitness and nutrition, but psychologically, emotionally, to really help people become the strongest, healthiest version of themselves.
So it sounds like you don't just have a CrossFit gym, you have a lot more going on to it than that. What are some of the other things that you do at the actual gym besides, you know, just the CrossFit trainings and the WODs, the workouts of the day, as they call them?
So, I mean, that's a part of it. We continually bring in and work with really high-level coaches in all areas. So for nutrition, for programming, like not just in the CrossFit realm, but just we search out like the best of the best out there, period. No matter, you know, what type of, you know, traditional training they do, we want results for the people that we work with. So we're not like confined to any one methodology. It's, you know, what gets results, what's working, and what can like help transform people's lives. So, you know, 80% of any type of transformation, you know, is psychological. You know, it's overcoming people's limiting beliefs. So whether that's, you know, somebody that comes in and is 50 pounds overweight, and in their mind, they're like, well, you know, I would be good if I just got to where I was only 30 pounds overweight, but I know it's not even possible for me to get back down to, you know, my college or high school, you know, best shape I was then. And so just to help people shatter that, like, no, like you can, like, even though, you know, you're 30, you're 40, you're 50, you can get into the best shape of your life right now. You know, so it's helping people break through that. So that's really cool and something that, you know, the whole team is really bought into and helps with, and we get to make a difference in people's lives every day.
What is the biggest factor that you think helps people come into your gym get over those limiting beliefs? Because as I found in just my coaching and doing this for years, it is one of the biggest things. It's people don't think big enough, and they think that what they see in front of them, what they can see from a day-to-day basis, is really all that they can do, all that they can achieve. But what is the biggest thing that you found that helps them get past that belief?
I think, you know, it's a combination of things. It's, you know, it's through stories, it's through, you know, it's through testimonials, it's through momentum. You know, it's walking people through the journey of, okay, like at first, like, you know, you didn't get to where you are right now overnight. You're not going to get out of it overnight either. But it's an analogy I like to use with new people coming in is like, you know, if you were like a pale, pasty white person coming in here and I was going to be your tanning coach, we wouldn't just go out in the sun for an hour on day one and get you tan. Like, you'd get burned. It'd be counterproductive to what we're trying to do. So at first, it doesn't take very much, just a little bit, you know, to move you in the direction of your goals. So to kind of just whatever, you know, it takes to help paint the picture of between pale, pasty white and tan, there's process. Between, you know, deconditioned, haven't worked out in a long time, and then being in really good shape, you know, there's a process, you know, and just helping people understand like the little milestones and the little wins that they can be, you know, looking back on and say, you know, man, 2 weeks ago, I couldn't do that. A month ago, I couldn't do that. You know, for them to just be able to realize, like, one of the favorite questions I like to ask people that, you know, when I see somebody come in, I see not where they are right now, but where I know they could be 6 months from now, 12 months from now, just a completely different person. Because once they start, you know, putting their body through resistance training, eating properly, that right there is going to do so much, not just for their body, but the way they feel about themselves, their confidence. That means, you know, improvement in family life. That means improvement at work. The thoughts that go into their mind, the language they use with themselves, all those things are going to change. So it's really cool to be able to ask somebody, you know, that's been in the program 6 months, like, hey, what would somebody have to pay you for you to unlearn everything you've learned and undo all the progress that you've made since you started here? And it's a really cool question because, one, it helps whoever asks that question really understand how valuable the experience is to the person. And it also helps the person think and reflect of how much progress they have actually made and what they have learned. And the answers that you'll get is like, dude, there's no way, you know, like I'm down 70 pounds. You know, when I first came in here, I was type 2 diabetic. I was taking medications and my doctor told me, you know, if I didn't do something that, you know, it was going to be a bad deal. And now I'm off of everything. I'm in the best shape of my life. I, you know, I can keep up with the kids. That's just, man, that's priceless. You know, it's just really cool.
Yeah, I think probably one of the best ways to do it, it seems like the way that you're doing it, which is basically, I love the pasty white analogy, by the way, it's fantastic, but it's basically showing them that they don't have to get to the end result right now. They don't have to lose those 50 pounds right now, but if they just jump in and have smaller goals, you know, once you start hitting those smaller goals, you have those small wins, you just build those up over time and they slowly add up. Those pounds will literally add up over time. And as you do it, you know, that 50 pounds is just like you, one day you wake up and it's there, it's gone. But having that huge goal in the beginning oftentimes is so overwhelming for people. And, you know, it just becomes a hurdle that they can't get over. And to me, Rob, it seems like you have this mindset, this great belief that you can do a lot of things and help a lot of people. Have you always had that belief that when you see someone and they first come in your gym that you see what they look like 6 months from now, a year from now, you can actually project like their future? Did you always have that type of skill or just philosophy?
You know, it's like, I hadn't really thought about that question until you asking it just now. I've been into fitness since I was like 11, you know, so like that's always really fascinated me. And I guess I have seen that in my head since the time, you know, I myself went through a transformation of being a fat kid to getting in shape. You know, my journey, you know, into fitness at first, seeing my body transform, feeling, you know, the difference in confidence and things like that that I went through. So I guess it was, if I had to say, I guess it would be from then, you know, because it did so much to impact me and mold my identity that I wanted other people to experience that as well. So that ignited my passion for training and my want and desire to help people, you know, through their journey and training as well.
So, Rob, I'm looking over some of the notes and it says that you overcame drug addiction or drugs in your past and also later on a prison term.
Yeah.
What was that like? What was the, because it sounds like to be able to overcome that and do what you're doing now, it takes that type of mindset, that type of willpower, but you know, perhaps it faltered at some point or whatever, you got down the wrong road, but let's start first with the drug addiction. What did that look like and how did that end up happening?
So basically I, had gotten into dealing drugs when I was younger. Bodybuilding and fitness was really my first passion and that like molded my identity. And, I got into selling weed and that just like became like a business essentially. And, it was a short-term way for me to like have the things that I wanted. It gave me a false sense of security in that, you know, I had money, I was doing well, but I knew, you know, there was this growing sense of anxiety that it would come to an end. And, so that, you know, I've always also like had like the desire to, I guess, escalate whatever it is that I'm involved in. So when it had to do with, you know, bodybuilding and things like that, like I wanted to like to be the best, you know, I read, you know, all like Arnold stuff, read everything I could get my hands on. And I wanted to just be as big and strong as I possibly could. So got into steroids then as well. And so selling weed and then ended up making a trip to Mexico and started getting steroids and stuff like that there. And so the drug dealing continued to escalate. And I was selling painkillers at one point in time and I got sick. Like I had strep throat one time and And I thought, man, you know, I could just take like one of those painkillers. I'll try that out. And I took it, and it was a OxyContin 40 milligram, I believe. And I took it, and I was just like, whoa, like this is awesome. Like I felt great. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into. You know, I thought, I was like, man, you know, like, why haven't I done this before? So I started taking them like pretty much every day, you know, and at first it was like a small amount. It didn't take that much. And, you know, I had really good practices, really good workouts. And then it started getting to the point to where I was taking so much so often that I was like starting to like nod out. And I was deadlifting one day, went for a one rep max and missed it. And then I tried to get it again. And then my back just like, I hurt it. And even through like all the painkillers I was on, it was hurt. Like it was immediate sharp pain. And so that was really a turning point for me then. From that moment, like my drug use shot up even more. And I was at that point, got up to where I was taking 800 milligrams of OxyContin a day. And I don't know if you or, you know, realize what that is, but that's a lot.
I got no reference for that. That's a ton though.
It's a lot. Like one 40 milligram pill is a lot to most people.
Wow. So 800. 800
milligram, yeah. And so this was like, even though I was making good money dealing drugs, this was like a $300 a day habit.
Oh shit.
And you know, and I was not able to stop on my own, and I was about to go to my family for help. And then somebody told me like, man, you should just go to like methadone clinic. And so I was like, okay, I'll try that. And like methadone is a synthetic opiate with opiate blocker in it. So it helps people get off of other opiates. And I didn't understand how that worked. So I started in on their program, and normally they'll bring you up to 100 milligrams. That's like the maximum dose. And then they have you take a blood test to see like how it metabolizes in your system. And then when I did that, based off of how much and how fast my system was metabolizing, they almost doubled me the dose of a regular person maxed out. So they had me on 180 milligrams of methadone a day. And I still didn't understand like, okay, well, how's this going to help me get off of OxyContins? But then I went and I bought a bunch of OxyContins, crunched them all up and sniffed them. And then they didn't do anything. They had absolutely no effect because of the opiate blocker that was in the methadone. And so I was like, oh, okay, that's how that works. So that was a short-term fix. I went from spending $300 a day to like $55 a week. And I had a counselor there at the methadone clinic. They assign you a counselor. And my counselor told me, they're like, your receptor sites like are so messed up because you've been on such high quantities of painkillers for so long. Like you will never be able to go without painkillers. They told me that, you know, and I believed it. You know, I believed it. And around the same time, I thought it would be a good idea for me to start also selling cocaine. So I started doing that, started sniffing it as well. And I did that so much that I couldn't sniff it anymore. Like it messed up my nose where I just couldn't sniff it anymore. And so naturally I was like, okay, well then I should just shoot it then, right? I mean, like I took health science technology 1 and 2. I know how to be sterile with needles and stuff like that. And like, besides like Sigmund Freud, he shot cocaine and he was pretty smart, right? So, should be fine for me to do it. And so I started on that, and I got to the point to where I was shooting cocaine about 15 times a day. I mean, wow. Life was like, it was bad. I mean, like my family was trying to get through to me, and it just wasn't happening. You know, I was somehow able to justify all of my actions in my head. I mean, there was even, you know, there was a moment where I was in my bathroom. I had my 2-year-old daughter and her mom were in the next room, had no idea what was going on. And earlier that day, I had, because whenever I would get like the cocaine and I was making up shots, like I would weigh them out individually. I would mix them with bacteriostatic water. You know, I had this process, but on this particular day, like I made up a double dose and I meant to split it, but I forgot. So I was in the bathroom about to get in the shower and I take this shot. And just as I push it all in to my vein, like I realize what I did. I realized that I just took a double dose and I start to freak out a little bit. But at the same time, like I don't want them, you know, my daughter and her mom in the other room to know. So I just like slide into the shower in the bathtub and the water's like pouring over me and like I'm like grabbing my wrist, like trying to feel my pulse and like I'm feeling this pain in my chest and I'm just like, oh my God, like please don't let me die. And you know, I get this vision in that moment of my daughter and her mom like standing at my gravesite and you know, all this is running through my head. And it finally like it passes. And, you know, you'd think like that's the moment that I reflect on and tell everybody that's where, you know, that's where I stopped it. And that's, you know, why I turned my life around. But it wasn't. Like the grip that addiction had on me was so powerful that literally like less than 30 minutes later, I had somehow justified what had happened. And I was making up another shot.
Wow.
So what brought all that to an end was, I fell asleep at a stoplight. My foot stayed on the brake somehow. And I woke up to the police pulling me out of my vehicle and I had drugs and a gun on me. And yeah, like, I mean, I literally, the only time I slept then is just when I passed out, you know? So like me getting caught, like them catching me, like, I mean, the fact that like that my foot stayed on the brake, that I don't know how many cycles the light went through before the police showed up, but I'm sure it was a lot. And then, you know, that my foot didn't slip off the brake, that I didn't float out into the intersection killing myself or killing other people, you know, is just like a miracle in and of itself. So that really saved my life. And you know, I had a lot of drugs on me. Like I had like over like 1.1 kilos of cocaine and like 44 separate bags and a gun. And, so I had to go to court and, I had an attorney that was like, you know, man, like this first offense, like you're going to be good. Like you're just going to get some probation, something like that. It's cool. And, whenever I went in for sentencing day, like it wasn't cool. And the judge didn't see it like that. And I got a 20-year prison sentence.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So that day, like reality really kicked in as they're cuffing me up and my family's crying. And, I just made a decision. Like I just clearly in that moment that like, it was like, okay, it is what it is. Like, I'm going to change my life. I'm going to help other people change their lives. There's not going to be one day that I can look back on and think like, why didn't I use this time more effectively? It was like, I'll show everybody, you know, and I'll show myself like, this isn't going to be the thing that defines me like this. Like I'm going to make every day count. Watch. That's how it started.
Yeah. Wow. That is incredible, man. What an intense, insane story. I want to dive back into, I want to pick up this story from that point forward in a minute, but I do want to ask you, what do you think in your mind led to that? Do you think there was some type of issues when you were a child that, you know, led to the addiction later on in life? Was there something going on even later on in life in the background that you kind of didn't want to deal with, and this was your way of kind of coping with the problems, with the issues? What do you think, looking back now, actually led to this downward spiral of the addiction that you had?
Well, I think I have, my dad was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. So I think that, I don't know, I want to say like I have an obsessive type personality. Like I'm very regimented in whatever I get into. And so I think, you know, it served me when I was like getting into my health and fitness. Where it didn't serve me is like when I got into like dealing drugs. It served me in the sense that I, you know, aspired to and became a quote unquote, you know, better, more successful drug dealer, right? Ascended up the ladder and created this operation, you know, through Mexico where I was, you know, just having drugs across the border and had a spot in my car where I would package everything up. And yeah, I just had this whole like elaborate, you know, system that I came up with. But, you know, at the same time, it was, I think the reason that I got into fitness in the first place, being a fat kid growing up, there was a time I was like 11, 12, where I got beat up by an older group of boys. And I didn't know that it was coming. And it was one of the things, like, as it happened, like, there was like eight people, like one of them punched me, one of them spit in my face. And I was just like, please stop, you know, like that kind of deal. And so like when it ended, I felt so humiliated that I didn't do something. Like, you know, why didn't I do something? Why didn't I defend myself? But it was just like one of those things that happened, you know, right in the moment, and it just ate at me, and it just ignited this fire in me. Like, I don't ever want to feel that way again. And so that's what got me to start bodybuilding, resistance training. And that, as I started to develop in that, that gave me a sense of certainty, right? It made me feel better. It boosted my confidence. It took me away from the direction of ever feeling like that again. And so I think in me dealing drugs also, it gave me a false sense of certainty, because yes, I was, you know, I was making money and I was, you know, doing well, but there was also with that the growing sense of anxiety, because I knew like this would come to an end, you know, it would end. It was just how. So whenever the back injury occurred, that really like took my identity from me, because I think, you know, the only thing that was like propping me up at that point was my connection to fitness, was my connection, you know, to my body and being strong. And then when the injury happened, I couldn't work out anymore. So now I just have time, drugs, and money.
Yeah. And it's a terrible combination.
Yeah.
Sure. By the way, were you doing steroids? I know you mentioned at some point that you started selling steroids. Were you actually doing them as well?
Yeah. Yeah. Back, I mean, man, I got up to one point in time, I was like 280, 290. Like, I mean.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
How tall are you?
Like 6'2", 6'2". Wow.
290. That's massive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that just, when you stop doing that, you know, you throw your back out or whatever, you messed up your back, you can't lift anymore. I mean, that's totally a crushing blow to your ego when you've been taking steroids and you're just walking around the biggest dude in pretty much any place you go.
Yeah.
It really does. It hurts in so many levels, emotionally, psychologically. And I think it just kind of led, you know, more and more into that spiral of going downhill and making that addiction worse. But Rob, let's pick up that story from where you were a moment ago. So you get sentenced. The judge says, you know, fuck that. You're not giving you probation. We're not going light on you. We're actually going to throw the book at you and give you 20 years for your first offense. What are you thinking in the courtroom then? Are you thinking like, you know, I know you said this is where I have to stop, but are you thinking like, you know, you're screwed, 20 years is down the drain? Or are you thinking like, you know, there's hope for an appeal, I got to, you know, see what I can do here? And are you more of in a positive mindset at this point or a negative one?
I was immediately like, I mean, I was in shock, but at the same time I was like, okay, like I'm going to make every day count. I am going to, like, I looked at it like, okay, there's going to be no other time in my life that I'm going to have to so selfishly devote to bettering myself. Mm. Like I just chose that view. You know, it was my decisions that I made that led me there. It was nobody's fault but mine. And my attorney was like, hey man, like I'm going to get you back up for review in a year. We'll get you out. And, I mean, it was like, don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, it was bad. Like, you know, when I first went from, you know, from court to Oklahoma County Jail, I would have nightmares. Like, you know, I would go to sleep and I would dream that I was out and that I was free. And then I would wake up and I wasn't, you know? And, that sucked. You know, I had thoughts of killing myself, you know, I mean, just all kinds of crazy thoughts, you know, went through my head. And at the same time, like I'm coming off drugs. So, I mean, it was pretty bad. I spent about 6 months in Oklahoma County waiting to get processed before going to prison. And, it probably took, you know, and I started like, cause I had the only thing I knew fitness wise was working out with weights and in all the facilities that I was in until like toward the very end, there were no weights. So I had to like learn how to do everything, just body weight. And so it took almost a year for my body to feel normal again. Cause remember, like my counselors at the methadone clinic told me I would never be normal again. Right. That I would never be able to go without painkillers. And actually, you know, when I went into county and they asked, are you on any medications or anything? And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm on 180 milligrams of methadone a day. And they're like, okay, cool. Well, you know, not anymore.
Oh shit. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was tough. So for anybody out there listening, that's ever been in addiction, especially with opiates, to be on that high of an amount and then to just not, can understand like that's pretty bad. It took about a year for me to start to normalize. And then like, whenever I first got to the first prison facility that I was at, it was like a medium/maximum security facility. The first thing I did was I tried to get in their drug program. Cause the questions going through my mind was, man, like, how did this happen? How did this happen? What led up to this? How can I not do that again? And then what can I do with my life now? And so when I was going through the question of, you know, what led up to this, everything took me back to that moment that I talked to you about, you know, like being in the bathroom and taking that shot, almost dying. And then it was like, how was I able to justify that? How was I able to 30 minutes later be doing another shot? How? And I couldn't come up with an answer. You know, there wasn't one. There was nothing logical about it at all. So I tried to get in a drug program there and they wouldn't let me because I had too many days remaining on my sentence. So I just took it upon myself to find the answer. So I did a lot of reading. You know, I read so many books and I would just like, I read, I studied, I worked out, and I talked to very few people. And that's how I did my time. And, you know, I took every like education opportunity that I could. It reframed the way that I thought about things. So when I had the opportunity for school, like before getting locked up, my parents wanted me to go to school, but I was like, man, you know, I got to study, man. But this was like, you know, once having gone through nights where I'm just like staring at a spot on the wall or the ceiling and just thinking, man, like, dude, I can't wait until I can just get out there and have the opportunity to struggle, to barely get by and live paycheck to paycheck. Let me get that. Like, please, you know, because that's like when you experience like that kind of contrast, at least for me, whenever I got to a facility where there was an opportunity for me to do school, it was like, oh man, like I get to do this. I get to do it. You know, not oh, I have to do it. It's not I get to do it. So it made me understand in that moment, like how people could, you know, come here from third world countries and like become lawyers and doctors and work their ass off because they have that contrast. You know, they've come from, you know, poor living situations and they see all the opportunity that there is now, that there is here, you know? And so it was the same thing. It really changed my way of thinking and appreciation for things.
So Rob, how long did you actually end up having to spend in prison? How long was the sentence? What happened? What transpired to actually get you out?
So I discharged a 20-year sentence in 7 years, 6 months, and 18 days. So the calendar amount of time I spent locked up was 7 years, 6 months, and 18 days.
Wow.
So yeah, I got good days for things. There's like a level system that you get credited, you know, an amount of days every month for programs you complete, you get a certain amount of days. So I did everything that I could, to get time reduced. And yeah, so I discharged a 20 in that amount of time.
Wow. That's still a lot of time, man. Seven and a half years. You know, it sounds like it completely transformed your life. It was actually, I mean, would you look back at it now and say that it was a blessing in disguise, or is that still putting a little too much on, you know, on that phrase?
No, it absolutely was.
Okay.
It was.
Yeah.
Had that, I believe everything happens the way it's supposed to. You know, had I not gone to jail, I believe I would be dead. You know, had I not gotten the amount of time that I got, maybe I wouldn't have taken it seriously. You know, maybe if I only got 5 years or 3 years and was out, you know, in a year, maybe I wouldn't have learned my lesson, you know? So I think it was like when we get into these routines and behavior patterns, you know, that we're like in a trance, like we just like kind of when you're on your way to work, you can just like check out, right? And you just like exit the exit you need to. But it takes something interrupting your pattern to really get your attention. And I was so deep that it took something severe that I was either going to die or like that pattern interrupt had to happen. And that came in the form of that hefty prison sentence, you know, and it did the job. It caused the deep reflection that needed to happen. It caused the new questions to come into my mind, you know, that I needed to ask. It caused me to, you know, make the deals and terms with myself. Like, hey, you know I have a problem with painkillers. I can never be around that again. So I will not be in any situation where that's around. I just won't. That's a non-negotiable. I won't do it. You know, I don't drink. I don't do anything. But that was one, you know, while I was still in, I was so scared, like, I was like, I never want this to happen again. So what do I need to do to be like fully prepared to make sure I don't put myself in any situations where that could even potentially be some kind of possibility? So that's been a non-negotiable and I stuck to that.
What would you say is the biggest thing that you learned about your time being in prison and just having to deal with all this stuff? I mean, what's the biggest takeaway? What's the biggest mindset shift that you took from that time?
It's that, I mean, that basically like you can do, like there's so much that you can do. Like, you know, if I wanted to just believe that life is what it is, like, you know, okay, I'm a convicted felon. Like I am good enough to do minimum wage work for the rest of my life. You know, that could be the story that I took on, that I chose to believe, right? But I didn't, you know, I just like in the drug world that I, you know, just automatically ascended in the direction of being around like better drug dealers and things like that. Like now it was like, and like in that world, in that mindset, in that time in my life, I negatively influenced myself. I negatively influenced other people. And that's something that I can never take back. But now like moving forward, I get the opportunity to influence myself and others in a positive, impactful, meaningful way. And I get to do that. I get to do that every day. So now the ascension is me being around the top fitness experts, the top nutrition experts, the top business experts, the top mindset experts, to learn from them, to learn like how to overcome these limiting beliefs. One of the first ones for me was through Bedros, you know, because I had this belief in my mind as I'm getting into fitness, as I'm getting into training people, man, who am I to help people out? You know, I'm a convicted felon. There's all these other like trainers and stuff that are more knowledgeable than me. And they haven't gone through that. They don't have that on their record. And then the video that I saw was him talking about, you know, there are people out there crying themselves to sleep at night because they don't have the information that you could provide for them. And you're not telling them because you're worried about what people are going to think about you. And that hit me.
It's powerful. How long ago actually did you get released from prison? And then how long after your release did you actually open up your gym and actually start doing the stuff that you're doing now?
I got out September 11th, 2012. Yeah, this year will be 7 years. So within like when the last, because I went from like a medium slash maximum security prison. I was there for like 18 months. Then I was at a minimum security prison for 3.5 years. Then I was at like a work center for 18 months. And then I ended up, the last place before I actually got out was like a drug rehab center slash halfway house. And so when I got there, you know, I had the choice of either taking a welding job or working for this place called Big Truck Taco. And I chose the one working for Big Truck Taco because I knew it was going to involve me interacting with a lot of people. And the thought of that just scared me to death because I had had to become a different person for so long. I had to, you know, in prison, like I would talk to very few people. Other than that, I would have this like, don't fuck with me face on, and just like unapproachable. Right. So I knew I had to desensitize myself to that process to like have people skills. And, so yeah, I took that job for the sole purpose of desensitizing myself to social interaction. And so I did that, and then I got recertified. I got my ACE certification as a personal trainer. I did that while I was still locked up. So when I got out, I was basically immediately went to the gym that I now own. It was a 24-hour facility at the time, just a regular like Globo gym. And I went in there and just told the owner of the building, like, hey, I'm a certified personal trainer, but I just got out of prison and I'm looking for somebody to give me an opportunity. And so that's how my one-on-one training started there, you know, where I'm at now. So, you know, I just trained one-on-one clients there and then eventually like talked the owner into letting me open up a little like 1900 square foot spot that he used to have is like, it was like his man cave. He had his boat and cars and stuff like that in there. Talked him into letting me rent that out. That's when I took on my first partnership and that, you know, things started going bad. So I had two failed partnerships and that's where the name, you know, the Twice Bitten CrossFit comes from. Two failed partnerships in the process of learning, you know, getting coaches and starting to learn how to actually run a business. And all the obstacles that had to be overcome just to get to that point. Two failed partnerships, two lawsuits. And then going from 1,900 square feet to 3,500 square feet or 4,000 square feet, and then actually taking over the whole space, the 16,000 square foot space that I'm in now, that was the regular gym. So it was a like... It was a pretty crazy transition, how it's all happened.
Yeah, it's, you know, you got to be resilient to keep moving forward with that, man. And I think your whole story is a story of resiliency and redemption as well, man. It's a fantastic story, and Rob, I thank you for coming on and sharing it with our listeners. There's so many great takeaways from today's episode. What's the last send-off takeaway message that you'd like to leave our Elite Man audience, and then that a place that our listeners can check out more about your work and what you're up to now?
So mine is really, you know, just having the perspective of being able to, and it's not always easy. It's probably not ever easy, but to view the problems that we have as gifts, because they are the things that make us grow. They are the things that get us out of our comfort zone. And pretty much, like, when you look back at any of those, like, circumstances you've gone through in your life that were really, like, challenging, you grew from it, you know? So to be able to take the perspective while you're in it, to look at, okay, like, this is a growth opportunity. What is the lesson here? What can I learn from this? Versus just being in the moment and thinking about all that shitty, you know, immediate, like, what you focus on is what you feel. So if you can focus on, hey, where's the lesson? How can I grow from this? Then it can dramatically, like, change, like, where you're coming from and how you deal with the challenges that you face.
Awesome. And then what's a place our listeners can check out more about you?
So you can find me on Facebook, Rob Groupie, on Instagram, Rob Groupie, and also the gyms, Twice Bitten CrossFit. You can check that out. Those are all on Facebook. Reach out. You know, we're about changing people's lives.
I love the message, man. Rob, thanks again for coming on. Guys, definitely check him out. And I know our guys are going to love this one, Rob. So thank you for coming on, and I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
Hey, have you checked out our Elite Man YouTube channel yet? If not, get on it right now. Go to EliteManMagazine.com/YouTube and start watching our fantastic videos. We cover everything from dating, health, business, fitness, confidence, mindset, social skills, everything that you need to know to be a 21st century elite man. We've got you covered. We have a new video coming out every Monday and Friday, and I'm telling you, this is the number one place to get your elite man fix and the number one place to grow as a man. These videos will absolutely change your life and entertain you at the same time. I'm telling you, check these videos out right now. I have so much fun putting them together, and I know you're going to absolutely love them. EliteManMagazine.com/YouTube. Make sure you check it out right now and subscribe to our channel to get more of these fantastic videos and get notified the instant we release a new video. EliteManMagazine.com/YouTube. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do, and that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.
Hey, scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.